we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
I mean, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices show here on Vancouver Co-op Radio. We are Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, November the 24th, 2017. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by our co-host, Jen Dobell.
Hello.
Jillian, Elise, and Sinead are away today, but thanks for coming, Jen. So this week's show is all about plant-powered muscle. That is how we can live a compassionate, healthy, and happy lifestyle where no animals are harmed, and we can still be athletic and strong. We have a feature interview with two people today who embody this example by eating just plants and advocating for animals in their city of Victoria, British Columbia. They were here just last weekend, and we met up with them, Randy Kujawa and Mike Downey, who call themselves the Warriors of Compassion. Mike and Randy are a duo of plant-built, muscle-bound vegan bodybuilders, and they competed in the Popeyes Fall Classic BC Amateur Bodybuilding Competition last week. They will be on today's show for an in-depth interview to tell us all about how they gain big muscles while advocating a message of compassion for the animals wherever they go. That interview is coming up in about 11 minutes, so please do stay tuned, especially if you want to know where they get their protein. So, Jen, you went last week to support Mike and Randy at the bodybuilding competition, and I want to hear all about it.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to be really honest. I was so reluctant to go because I knew that I would come into a foyer with all kinds of booths set up offering animal products, because that's pretty rampant in that industry. I'm glad I went in the end because I got inspired to get myself in shape, and I was able to see that Mike and Randy were really no different from the other bodybuilders there, which wasn't surprising to me, but it sends a good message to those attending.
Mm. They both placed in top five,
yeah,
and Mike came in third in his age category, so they were even a little bit better than most of the people there.
That's true, that's true. And so let's just talk about my entry into the facility. So as I predicted, I was surrounded by tables of people offering whey products, and I can't keep quiet. For those of you who listen to our show regularly, you know that I'm always on as an activist, and I was being offered these products, and I couldn't help but tell them every single detail about the dairy industry, and not only the cruelty of it, but also that it's not healthy. And I'm just going to read out something that I got off of a website called nutritionfacts.org. This is Dr. Michael Greger's website. He goes through all the top studies on nutrition. So in the population study on milk's effects on the body, researchers found more than 100,000 men and women, followed more than 100,000 men and women for about 20 years, finding significantly higher rates of bone and hip fractures, heart disease, cancer, and premature death in general for women who drank more milk. Three glasses a day was associated with nearly twice the risk of dying early. Men with higher milk consumption were also recorded having higher risk of premature death, as well as increased risk of prostate cancer. All animal-based foods contain sex steroid hormones, such as estrogen, which play a role in diminished male reproductive potential and premature puberty, and could potentially stimulate the growth of hormone-sensitive tumors. Dairy consumption may also play a role in increased risk of asthma, Parkinson's disease, and elevated blood pressure. Speaking of asthma, my friend cured her asthma from going vegan. And
cutting out the dairy.
Yeah, and speaking of the estrogen, you get a lot of people that won't eat soy products because they're concerned about the estrogen. Well, here we are, it's in animal products, and people don't think about this.
And the estrogens in animal products are actually the same as the estrogens that are in our body that we don't want. Soy doesn't have that.
Yes, yeah. Right. So the soy thing is a bit of a myth. It's something we can talk about on another show for sure. But back to the competition. I am so proud of Mike and Randy. They're good friends of mine. And I think that what they're doing is really, it's a very unique form of animal rights activism because they're getting a message out to a group of people that typically might not think about these things.
They are finding their niche. And I spoke to that to Randy about that after our interview last week, actually. And he was saying, like, this is what I think, this is the best way that I can use my time and my activism is to show that you can be big and strong and live on plants and be happy.
Yeah.
And they both exemplify that.
Well, there's many times I regret that this is not a TV show because I wish we could show everybody pictures right now. But anyone, check out our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. You can see pictures of Mike and Randy.
And the videos that Jen took.
Yeah, I'm really proud of them and so grateful for what they're doing.
So I want to hear a bit about these conversations. When you're talking about whey, I just want to clarify for our listeners, you're speaking about the vendors who are selling whey-based protein powders, which are the majority of the protein powders that are out there on the market because the big bodybuilders think that they need to consume all this excess protein to maintain their muscles, which we will find out on today's show that that's not exactly true. So what were these conversations like that you had with them?
Well, there were two tables that I had people that I was speaking with. So the first one offered me a sample and I offered her some truth. And then she told me, oh, well, this is humane, organic whey powder. And I said, that makes no difference in how the animals are treated. The mother cows still have to be repeatedly impregnated. The only way that we produce milk as mammals is if we're having a baby. You know, it looked like she'd never thought about that before. That was a quick conversation. But the one that was a little bit longer was with another fellow. And, you know, I said to him, I appreciate you listening to me. And I appreciate that you might not know these things. But I really want you to know what you're selling is cruelty. It's a death industry for these animals. Mm-hmm. It's horrible. And I told him every detail and he started to say, oh, I know, my sister's vegan. And when I told him every single detail about the health issues and the cruelty to the animals, I said, did you know all of this? He said, no, actually, you told me some things that my sister hadn't told me. And I thought to myself, at least he can never forget that. But he was defensive and said, are you trying to ask me to quit my job? And I said, no, I'm trying to make your job better. The plant-based protein industry is booming right now. You can have the same job, you can be so successful, and you can go home and put your head on your pillow and feel good about yourself that you didn't exploit animals and that you didn't lie to the public about health benefits of dairy to make your money. Wouldn't that be better?
And really, if you are thinking about your livelihood, there are always ways to make money that don't exploit animals. And as you said, the plant-based proteins are starting, I think they're starting to push out the whey proteins.
Yeah.
The whey still dominates from what I can see, but
for
I'm
sure.
seeing so many more plant proteins out there. Yeah, well, thanks so much for that. Thanks for going out and you know, just speaking up as you always do, Jen, and for getting some conversations out there and for seeing Mike and Randy. I wish I could have seen that. It looked like so much fun.
Well, they're going to be I know for sure Mike is going on to another level. He mentioned going to Montreal. I'm not sure what Randy's plans are.
Randy's going to the Nationals in Montreal.
Oh, great.
He says
okay.
That's next July.
So this is the end of it.
Yeah,
all right.
So we'll hear more about that soon. Thanks for that update.
Good.
Hey there, Co-op Radio listeners. Do you like food? Of course you do. Would you like to learn more about food? Why not? Well, then tune in every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio, where we talk all about food. Sourcing food, buying food, the politics of food. Hey, even cooking food. Food, glorious food. Listen every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
Just in this morning, allegedly the false killer whale at the Vancouver Aquarium has died. Chester has gained attention lately from photos taken of him exhibiting stereotypic behavior that is common in animals in captivity. An animal rights activist took photos of him repeatedly bumping his head against a boat bumper, which was placed in his pool. And the animal behaviorist said that he was exhibiting signs of severe depression and potentially psychosis from captivity. So animal rights activists today are feeling probably a combination of a sadness and relief for an animal that really did not have a life worth living. No details have been published yet, and we will keep you posted on next week's show in regards to what happened.
Yeah, and watch your Facebook page too for updates on that news.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Really sad. Yeah. So we have a recent update to a court case from May of 2016 when a conservation officer killed a bear cub near Dawson Creek and said they were acting within the law. The woman who found and reported the orphaned cub on the side of the road filed a lawsuit which was heard in BC Supreme Court this week. The Association for the Protection of Fur-Bearing Animals filed a petition with the court, challenging the officer's decision to kill the cub and accusing the BC government of breaking its own law on the destruction of wild animals. They argue the Wildlife Act prohibits officers from killing animals unless they pose a threat to people, property, or wildlife. The province counters in court documents that the law gives wide discretion to officers who destroy animals. A wildlife rehabilitation center was willing to take the cub, but this was not considered as an option. The petitioners are seeking an order directing the province to obey the law as they interpret it. They also want a declaration that the conservation officer's decision to kill the cub was unlawful. The province argues in court documents that the law gives officers the authority to destroy animals as they deem necessary. It points to a section of the Wildlife Act that says offenses outlined in the act do not apply to an officer engaged in the performance of his or her duties. Conservation officers in BC have responded to 1,972 calls about black bears and killed 454 of the animals between January and the end of October. During the same period last year, they responded to 1,757 calls and killed 458 black bears. In other news, evolutionary biologist Richard Dawkins has schooled the United Kingdom government for essentially voting that animals can't feel pain or emotion. The government recently won a vote not to include animal sentience, the notion that animals feel pain and emotion, within the EU withdrawal bill. The bill moves existing EU legislation into UK law post-Brexit, meaning that the UK may no longer recognize animal sentience when they leave the EU. Dawkins is making the point that science has already proven that animals are sentient beings. The Cambridge Declaration on Consciousness states that non-human animals have neuroanatomical, neurochemical, and neurophysiological substrates of conscious states, along the capacity to exhibit intentional behaviors. Consequently, the weight of evidence indicates that humans are not unique to possessing the neurological substrates that generate consciousness. Non-human animals, including mammals and birds, or many other creatures, including octopus, also possess these neurological substrates, further expressing. Dawkins later pointed out that surely humans would come under government's description. He said, quote, animals can't feel pain or emotions. Animals, we aren't plants, fungi, or bacteria, so that makes us animals.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
And also in the news lately has been that, and we featured this on the show last year in 2016, New Zealand is passing their law to actually acknowledge that animals have sentience.
Mm-hmm.
So seems kind of backwards. We know that animals have sentience, and that's a really good point. We are animals.
Right. But, you know, for people who don't understand why this kind of thing happens, we have to look at how government is trying to represent the values of people like farmers. And how that might affect their industries.
Right. And also on that point, of all the farmed and animals that do have rights in North America, it's often the ones that are the chickens, the ones that are mostly abused, that don't. So why?
Yeah.
And what about the rats and mice in the labs? They don't either.
I know.
There seem to be lesser beings.
I know. So I think that these people who are making these votes are well aware that animals have sentience, but they're just thinking of the consequences to industry.
So we have time for a couple quick events.
Okay. Yeah. So the 5th annual charity craft fair will be held on Saturday, November the 25th from 10 to 4 at the Woodwards Building. The charity craft fair features a collection of charities, local handcrafters, and small businesses offering their wares to holiday shoppers. They hope to create a community of socially conscious holiday shoppers different from other craft fairs. 100% of admission proceeds from the charity craft fair will be donated to charity cause of your choice. And this year, the wildfires that ravaged BC are the cause of choice and is the BC provincial, as is the BC Provincial Firefighters Burn Fund. So more information on that is on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Do we have time for one more, or are we out of time?
Yeah, we're out of
time.
That's
okay. Everything's on our Facebook page for the week. Lots of events going on.
Animal Voices Vancouver. Check that out. Thanks for the news and events. For our feature interview today, we have a dual interview with vegan bodybuilders Randy Kujawa and Mike Downey, the Warriors of Compassion. They hail from Victoria and were in town here in Vancouver last weekend to compete in the Popeyes Fall Classic BC Amateur Bodybuilding Competition. In today's interview, they are going to speak with us about what it takes to be a successful plant-based bodybuilder and what inspires them to lead the vegan lifestyle. Hello, Randy and Mike, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, thank you for coming by today after a busy weekend in your first bodybuilding competition as the Vegan Warriors of Compassion. Can we start by each of you telling us a bit about yourselves? How long have you both been vegan? How old are you both? And what is your history with athleticism and bodybuilding? Randy, why don't you go first?
I've been a vegan now for 22 months, and when it comes to my history with fitness, I've been lifting for about 10 years, and about 5 or 6 years ago, I decided to competitively compete, and this last show was actually my best performance to date. I ended up taking home 5th place. I got a bye to go to Nationals, which has been my lifelong goal as a bodybuilder, so yeah, things have been going good there.
And what about you, Mike? What is your history and how old are you?
I am 41. Mm-hmm. So this year I competed in the Masters, which is, I call the elders division, the ages of 40 to 50 years old. So it's a different division than Randy, that's for sure. And I started with a pescatarian. I switched over from omnivore diet to a pescatarian diet, and then to vegetarian, and then to veganism about 3 years ago. So
cool.
About 5 years ago, I was I had ended my fight career, which I was the Canadian kickboxing champion and the BC Muay Thai champion. So at that point, I thought to myself that I didn't need to eat meat and dairy anymore to be big and strong. And then after I made the switch, I realized I had been fooling myself all along.
Yeah, so you've both been plant-based for a few years now, and I would like to hear both of your stories. Mike, if you can go more into that as to what led you to the vegan lifestyle. So, Mike, I know you have a strong connection with animals as well. Did that play a part in it?
Oh, significantly, because I adopted 2 pigs, potbelly pigs, that I call my children. And, you know, and when I first got them, I still continued to eat meat, but while I'm eating meat, I would look down at them and go, okay, kids, all right, I'm gonna man up and I'm gonna watch all those videos that I've been hiding myself from. And I found Earthlings by myself on Google, and I watched it, and, yeah, I was heartbroken. I stopped the video halfway through and started screaming and crying and flipping out. And then I took a vow that I was not only going to stop eating meat and dairy, but I was going to do what it takes to help save other animals and whatnot. So
that's amazing, and you are doing that. And Randy, what was the pathway of leading to veganism for you like?
I'm 35 years old as well, and 2 years ago was a partner that I was with, she adopted a vegan lifestyle, and I never in a million years thought I would ever be a vegan, but when she started making her food, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to eat your food just to make your transition easier. And then after about 2 weeks, I was like, man, this is so much better than like my chicken and rice and my fish and rice, and it was different flavor palettes and foods. And then I literally went vegan overnight. Same thing. She's like, well, why don't you watch like Cowspiracy? And then we watch Earthlings. And the next day I went vegan. I literally never turned back. I was like, oh, my God, I cannot contribute to this anymore. It literally changed my soul.
Do you think it was more like Earthlings is very visceral? There's a lot of graphic imagery in it. Was it more of that, or was it more of the environmental message in Cowspiracy that did it for you?
It was the animal cruelty. It's just hard to watch, and you're like, I cannot believe that this is like common practice. And it was my birthday actually when I went out and I bought a beef rib because I ate vegan for a few weeks, and then I took one bite of this thing because I was going to like treat myself on my birthday, and I just put it on my plate and I said I can never do it and never turn back.
So Mike, for you, what are some of the most pressing issues that concern you in today's day and age with regards to animal rights issues?
It's, well, I hate to use the term factory farming, but mm-hmm. people recognize that term. So the mass produce animals for overconsumption of a product that causes disease in humans, it just baffles me. Now, at this point, when I've done enough research to study that, you know, the cruelty that we cause to the animals is backfiring. It's like bad karma, and trying to gain people's recognition towards this is when I want to. I've had about 79 people. I've had 79 people tell me that I've helped convince them to stop eating meat.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I know. It was tough though, because when I first started sharing animal cruelty videos, which is what does the trick. That's the leading thing that I've been able to help convert people, is to show people the cruelty happening to animals over anything else. You know, people care more about that than their own health a lot of the time. So
I know you're both from Victoria, and we're here in Vancouver, but we have Facebook, we have social media, and I often see photos of these two very muscly guys, that's you two, by the way, at all these demos and events in Victoria. So, Randy, can you tell us what the animal rights scene is like in Victoria and how you like to participate?
Oh, I like to get out and do as much activism as I can. And same thing coming into Vancouver. When it was March to close all slaughterhouses, I was here. I made sure I came over for that. And what else was there? There was a few. Anytime there's any type of activism, I like to get up there. Because it is good to be showing people that you can be big, strong, healthy, happy on a plant-based diet. Because like when Mike and I go to an event, people really come up and they're like, man, we really appreciate this. Because we break that stereotype that mold of like vegans can't be big and strong.
Right. Do you wear like a lot of vegan message wear, like on like t-shirts and that, so people know?
Absolutely. Every
yeah.
day.
At the gym?
Every day.
Yeah. Every day.
Yeah. Every day.
Not right now though.
Well, hey, talk,
oh, your hat. Okay.
Talk vegan to me. Absolutely.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah. So that kind of brings me to my next question. In doing this competition yesterday, you're calling yourselves the Warriors of Compassion, which is a message in itself. Did you have a specific goal in mind with promoting yourselves as vegan athletes? And can you tell us about that?
Well, we were, you know, it would be great if at the event we were allowed to grab the microphone and announce it, or run to the edge of the stage and announce it. So we weren't capable of that. So we had some people come and support us in the audience, and we talked beforehand, and we were like, you know, maybe you guys can yell out, vegan athletes. And so that was about as much as we could do to promote that. But besides that, it's all social media. And when we share stuff on social media, like my Facebook, all my friends, you know, that used to doubt that you could be big and strong, they're like, wow, okay, you know what? Now I'm starting to realize that, you know, through social media is the main key. I think it's the main asset that we have.
Right. And speaking of people realizing that you can be big and strong and identify as masculine, like being vegan, I'd like to ask you about your take on veganism and masculinity. I think that maybe the perception is starting to change, but I still do think it is largely out there that, you know, to not eat meat as a man means that you're not a masculine person. So what is your response to this perception, Randy?
I don't know why people perceive it that way. I think it's more manly to stand up for what you believe in and just...
I do too.
Yeah. Like, it really is. It's... But I don't know.
So, Mike, I know...
I've personally been Canadian kickboxing champion, BC Muay Thai champion. I've fought for world championship. Nobody tries to tell me I'm not masculine enough. So, I have proven myself. I don't even hesitate to cry in front of people because I'm, you know, it doesn't bother me. There's no way that anybody can tell me that because I don't eat meat that I'm not masculine enough, because they look up to me as a masculine human being.
I love that you own that identity. Like, you're not even like, you don't have a a fear about what other people are going to think because you know who you are. And I feel that's the same with you, Randy.
Oh, because, absolutely.
Like, okay, just to, for people who can't see you because this is radio, like, what are your heights and weights? Like, maybe you can give people an idea of, like, actually how big you are.
Okay, well, before I started this prep, I'm 5'9", and I usually sit around 195. But now that I dieted down for the show, I'm down into the mid-170s. So,
wow. You
know, in being almost 200 pounds and literally a full set of abs, there's nothing...
How much percent body fat are you?
Well, right now...
Zero?
I'm literally skin and water.
Yeah, and Andy is ripped. And he's got veins popping out.
And Mike, I think you're even... Mike, you're even bigger height, size. Like, what are your height and weight dimensions like?
I'm 6'1", and I'm 220 pounds. When I did this bodybuilding competition, it's my first bodybuilding competition, which I got third place. Woo! And I decided to do men's physique because we wear board shorts, which go down to our knees. And my legs, I'll be honest with you, they're not that big. I do a lot of cardio and whatnot with my legs, but I don't do squats, and I don't do, like, a lot of weightlifting with my legs because now that I'm done with the bodybuilding, I'm going to get back into fighting, and I'm coming out of a retirement that I've been in for like the last half a decade. It's been 5 years since I fought. But now, because I have a cause and far more intent to raise awareness for the animals, what I thought was that it would be kind of cool if I went and fought for another championship belt, and then when I win it, I'm going to turn it down because it's made of leather. And how much of an impact, you know, like, maybe it sounds cheesy to some people, but it's what I can do because I'm capable. And I know we all have our own niche, you know what I mean? And and in order to raise awareness. So,
and you found yours for sure.
Yeah. So that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I always do what I say I'm going to do.
Are both of you friends with my friend Robert Cheek?
Oh, yeah. He just messaged me earlier today.
That's
congratulating
cool.
me.
He's doing like a tour of Canada right now. I wonder if he's around in our neighborhood. I've been meaning to ask him. So one more question I wanted to ask, sort of like on the topic of veganism and masculinity, because I think it's very attractive for a man to have compassion and muscles. Like, that's a really good combination. So what is it like? I'm just curious. Like, I don't get to ask many people this because there aren't a lot of vegan males out there. What is it like to date as a vegan male? Is that tough? I know, Mike, it seems like for years and years you had a struggle on Facebook, but maybe not anymore.
You know what? It's funny because this year, like, I was dating off and on, but somehow, you know, I believe a lot in the laws of attraction. And there was, like, a couple different girls that came my way that I began to date, like, randomly here and there, that turns out, even though I didn't know when I started dating them, that they were vegan. So
what? How does that happen?
Yeah, I know. Like, the 1% or the 2% or whatever it is of the population. So that is how that happened. Now I have an absolutely wonderful girlfriend, and I'm so happy, Michaela. And turns out when I first met her, I'm like, oh, I hope she's vegan. I hope she's vegan. I hope she's vegan. And then she...
That's a big hope.
She mentioned that she used to be vegan for a raw vegan for a couple of years and had her own page. She converted back to eating meat, but then when she met me, she said, I'll go back to veganism for you. Now we're together and we're both vegan. And
that's amazing. And you both look very happy together. And Randy, what is it like for you to date as a vegan? What has your experience been like?
That was actually kind of something that was, okay, when my wife and I ended up splitting up in January, and then in March I was like, you know what, I need a new start in life, and I was living up in Prince Rupert. Prince Rupert's not a very vegan-friendly community.
Right.
Isolated, and I was like, I knew Victoria was good. I came down over the Christmas with her, with the in-laws, and I was like, I'm going to move to Victoria. So when I moved here, I was like, all right, I'm this single, young, fit, healthy vegan guy, and I'm going to go there, and I'm going to get in this community. And I literally had no girl. Like,
the vegan women flocking to you?
No, it was like I almost repelled them. It was like, I don't know if they saw me. And like, I'm a super nice, compassionate guy. I'm out there doing activism and everything like this. And I don't know, maybe, I don't know what it was, but maybe I seemed high maintenance. I literally I could not find a date with a vegan girl for the life of me. And I literally tried. I would like put it out there in the community, nothing. It was like dead air. And then the few times I did go on a few dates, it was, I almost had a jaded experience when it comes to dating vegan women, because it was like, we just sat and talked about oppression and stuff, and I didn't...
depressing things in our lives that we see in the world.
And, you know, and I'm glad we share the same thing, but when it came to dating and the whole veganism thing, it just didn't really... So I spent a lot of time focusing on myself, and then I was like, you know what, I'm not really going to worry about this whole dating thing, and then actually I had somebody come into my life. She's not a vegan, she was. Her sister's vegetarian. We're going to go eat at a vegan place after this. But... yeah, it was being a single vegan fit guy. I don't know. It wasn't as well as I thought.
I guess what can be done about that?
Well, I don't know.
Because we want, I know as a vegan woman myself, I want more compassionate vegan fit guys around in my sphere of the world.
But it's like, it's almost like every girl wants a super nice guy, but then they find a nice guy and they're like, I don't want a nice guy. So it's like every, maybe you're like, I want this, you know, young, fit, vegan guy, but then it's around and it's like, I don't know, it's...
Well, that's a tough one. Maybe that's a mystery to be solved on another occasion. We should have you two back maybe for our annual Valentine's dating / vegan dating episode. That's always a fun one.
As long as Michaela is invited.
She absolutely would be invited. That would be fun.
You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO on Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
So I want to get back to talking about your training regimen that led up to your prep for yesterday's competition. I want to talk about, I believe, Randy, you were coaching Mike, right? Because you had more experience in this. So maybe you can talk about, like, when did you actively start training? And can you talk to us about what is involved for training via weightlifting and food intake to prepare for such an event as yesterday's?
Okay, we started our prep about 12 weeks ago. Now, we were training before that, so training was already the consistent part. Now it comes down to calories in, calories out, and shuffling around our macros. So when you've got your macronutrient ratios, that's the ratios of proteins, fats, and carbs. I have done, this is now my fifth show, and I did help Mike with his doing his meal prep and his meal planning.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So what happened was, is I went on a carb cycling schedule. So we started off the thing where we would have about 3 high carb days and 4 low carb days. Now I'm going to break that down. What that means is on a high carb day, I would have my macro ratio at 50% carbohydrates, 30% protein, and 20% fats. And then the other days, I would flip it around. I would have 50% fats, 30% protein, and 20% carbs. So now on the really high fat days, it gives your brain, it helps your cognitive functions, your organs, because you need healthy fats. So that was primarily like Brazil nuts, avocados, any type of nuts, stuff like that. I try to limit the oils, keep it more to the nuts for the fiber, right? And then on the high carb days, what it does is it ramps up your metabolism, because it's like, oh, I need to process all this rice and potatoes and whatnot. And when you're shuffling around there, when you're going high, low, high, low, high, low, your body's always in this state of trying to adapt to it. And then it just ramps your metabolic set point. And then at that point, then what I do is I just reduce the calories in, calories out. And that's how we did our prep.
That's really interesting. I'm always interested to know sort of how to manipulate my body as well to make it do what I want it to do. And so this plan that you're on, is this typical, this type of carb cycling for a bodybuilding competition, or is it something that you just sort of like customized?
Well, it's something that worked for me. Now, like backstage, there was people that were on keto diets. There's people that did intermittent fasting. There were people that did if it fits your macros. There was such a variety of diets there, and everyone looked great. Like, the thing is, if you follow a diet consistently, calories in, calories out, healthy food, you're going to require or get the results you want. Now, for us, being vegans, and this worked for me. Now, some people are like, well, why didn't you try intermittent fasting? Because I didn't have experience with it, and I don't want to go testing something I don't know. And I know carb cycling works, and I know it's healthy. And obviously it worked well for us, and we both took home some hardware.
So, Mike, what were the calories, like your calorie intake for prepping? Because I know that I read Robert Cheat's book, and he's got plans in there for 3,000 to 7,000 calories a day, all vegan. I saw your meals. So tell me, what were your meals like, and how many calories were you eating in a day?
You're going to have to let me answer that.
Okay, Randy.
Robert Cheat's seminars in Victoria, and I bought one of his books, and I read it, and when I got to the micros and macros part, I was like absolutely lost. That's why I got Randy to take care of all that, because I have no clue about micros and macros and calories and this and that. I eat out too much.
Oh, okay. So what were you feeding him, Randy?
Well, what we did is we started off, and sometimes life throws curves at you. Sometimes, like, if I say, okay, we were going to...
Life always throws curves at you.
Yeah, and with our schedule. So, like, I started him off at around... Because he's a bigger guy. He was, like, 220 pounds. We started in the low 3,000 calories, kind of about, like, 3,200. But he works two night shifts where he's working into the next day, and then he works at a bar, and then everything like this. So sometimes we couldn't get all the food in. So what we did is just kind of worked out. So we were around 3,000, then we tapered down to about 2,500. And, you know, sometimes you miss a meal. Sometimes you make up an extra meal. Sometimes you have a cheat meal. Sometimes you end up having a drink on the weekend. But as long as because we started the prep far enough out and we were consistent, it all just kind of fell into place. But we were around, I don't know, 2,800 kind of at the end.
For our listeners who just completely don't even know what you would be eating, like, are you, tell us, like, I've seen the pictures of your meal prep. Like, what are you eating in terms of actual food?
Okay, well, for myself, seitan is one of my primary sources of protein.
Wheat meat,
yes, I love it. It's super easy. I have a recipe that works for me. I whip up a loaf every week, and that lasts me.
And it's made out of vital gluten wheat flour, for people who don't know. It's about 75% protein, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just a little thing maybe the size of a hash brown is like 30 grams of protein. So it's super awesome. And it's really nice because when you're down on prep, it's less volume of food, keeps your stomach and your waist a bit tighter. But when it comes to calories, everybody's different. Like when I'm like, okay, I'm giving like 2,800 calories, that's specific for him, because based on if you're your height, if you're male, you're female, your activity level, your metabolism, and everything like this, and you figure it out, everybody's a little bit different. There's formulas and there's calculators out there. So if somebody's like, well, how many calories do I need to achieve a certain thing? There's a thing called my fitness calculator, I believe. And what you do is you punch it in there. There's a formula called the Harrison-Benedict formula. It's kind of like the industry standard. And then you punch in everything like that, and it'll tell you what your total daily energy expenditure is. So just basically to breathe, keep your organs going, and give you energy to go. Mm-hmm. It'll tell you what that is. And then you can figure out your calories.
Do you believe in using one of these?
No.
I'm looking at my Fitbit. No. I like it. It keeps me on track.
Well,
they're not totally accurate, but it's enough for me to kind of like keep myself in track.
But if you're working, like you're working this radio thing, I rate concrete. That's what I was doing. So I don't need to be like, did I hit my 10,000 steps? I'm like, did I survive work today and have enough energy to get to the gym? That was like my goal, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So Mike, I want to talk about cheat days, because I've seen your Facebook. I think you've had some cheat days.
You're talking to the right guy about
and I've seen some posts of yours like, oh my goodness, I just ate this and my competition's coming up. So what is your take on the importance of enjoying your meals and cheat days? Like, how do those two fit in together?
Well, you know, ever since switching to veganism, before I used to eat out a lot. I'd buy, like, you know, prepared meals and whatnot. But now, if I want to eat the kind of foods that I used to enjoy eating and share it with people so that to inspire people that they can eat all the same foods that they normally eat without harming animals, I started cooking for myself for like the first time in my life, and you know, I actually enjoy it. It's like a weekend kind of thing where I just want to cook and try out all these new meals. So I buy all the ingredients, I look up recipes, and then I whip up stuff, and I don't do it for myself. I usually always cook for other people as well, so it's always like kind of been like an experimental thing. But it's great because now I'm actually cooking meals for myself, so it's a beautiful thing. Although, yeah, when I make meals, they're more like fun foods rather than diet foods, that's for sure.
You make food for Michaela, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
She's lucky.
Yeah. And Randy.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I show up at Randy's in the morning, and I go, I'm going to make you some imitation battered deep-fried chicken.
Oh, that was so good.
So, I want to know about the differences that you've both noticed in training for bodybuilding and general athletics since you both became vegan. And Randy, I know you competed in bodybuilding events in the past, so I'm particularly interested to know what differences you saw this time around as a vegan bodybuilder. You came in fifth place this time, which is great, top five. That means you get to go to nationals if you want to. So what are the changes that you've noticed in your body this time around?
This is actually my second show as a vegan. Okay. I've never got a top five. Like, I got my fifth shows. I got a fifth at my last show, but it was a smaller show. There was only seven people in there, so you needed a top three to get a bye. And so I didn't earn that thing. But this was a huge show, and it was twice the amount of people, and everyone was in way better conditioning, so it was good. What I felt is before, every time I ever ate meat, I always felt so sluggish. Like, every time you go and get your 7 ounces of chicken, your body just, like, revs it down. And when you get in these lower calories and you're training hard, you're already run down. Like, Mike and I really had to struggle this last couple weeks. Like, the final ends of prep, you're just beat down. You're just, because you're training harder, you're eating less, and your body's like, all right. And then once you start to deplete your water... But adding the fact that when you do eat food here, every time I eat a vegan meal, I feel energized. Every time I eat a meat meal, I felt sluggish. So that's one thing that you do actually get that burst rather than making it worse.
When I first made the switch over, so I started exercising after about a few months in. And when I started exercising, I started building muscle easier than I ever had in my entire life, which I was shocked at because I just wanted to kind of like prove the point, because at that point I was sharing the animal cruelty videos and getting really hard time. I had like over 500 people on my Facebook remove me from Facebook. So,
wow.
I just wanted to show. Yeah, I know. It was ridiculous because nobody wanted to see it. Nobody wanted to know. They were all hiding from it. So I started exercising, and then I started hitting the heavy bag again because I hadn't trained in, I think, about a year and a half at that point. And then I started hitting the heavy bag, and this was like at the first point where I was still a vegetarian. And I think it hit the heavy bag 1 week, and then the next week, and then the next week. And it, like the third week, I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe how good of shape I'm in. It was amazing. And the week after, I fell apart, and I decided to eat some chicken one day. And when I ate chicken that day, I went to the gym about 2 hours later, and I went to hit the heavy bag. And all I had been doing up until that point was making progression. And when I ate chicken... And 2 hours later, I went to hit the heavy bag. It was pathetic. My energy levels were just like dropped significantly, and I couldn't do it. It collapsed me, and that's when I realized, wow, this whole time I'd been fooling myself. I'm like, it wasn't helping my fight career; it was taking away from it. And then I kept thinking, and that stuck in my head of like, man, I wonder what I could have done, or how much better I could have done on a vegan diet following like athletic career. So that's why I'm making my comeback next year in January when I go to Thailand, and then I'm going to go to Japan. So
that's amazing. Yeah. I'm curious to know, like, how are people receiving your message as the vegan warriors? You must be sort of like in a community, I imagine, of other bodybuilders in Victoria, because I know you guys always hang out at the gym, right? So you see each other. Like, what's it like at the gym when you're training and you've got your vegan message wear on and they see your enormous muscles? What is that like?
We're always turning heads, and people come up and they're like, you know, so you're vegan, because we literally wear shirts that just say big vegans across it.
We are vegan.
Yeah. Oh, everything I have, we're like one of my, like, March to Close Slaughterhouses things. There's always some activism. My girlfriend's always just like, why can you wear something that doesn't have vegan message on it?
I'm
like,
no way.
I was like, I don't really own anything that doesn't have one. This is so rare, but I'm going out for dinner with... So, but, yeah, people are... Well, the number one, they're impressed because they're like, you guys are so fit and we're so lean and all on a plant-based diet. So it's such a positive message.
Yeah, same with you, Mike. And you have your pigs as ambassadors too, because that gained a lot of traction in Victoria. So maybe you can talk about the big muscly man in Victoria who has two pigs as companion animals.
Yeah, it was great when we lived in Victoria and I had my pigs for about 3 years. You know, I even paid the... Canadian Food Inspection Agency to inspect my home 4 different times to allow these pigs to live in the home that I was living in Vic West, which is right close to downtown Victoria. And then 3 years later, Animal Control found my pigs, and told me that I had to move my pigs out of the city because they're not allowed. And I said, well, I paid $2,000 to okay them to live here. And they said, no, it's not going to work. So I was banned. I mean, my pigs were banned from the city. I had to relocate them, and I ended up buying a trailer, moving out some Inchosen to be able to keep my pigs because they were, I had them staying at a friend's for like almost a year, and I just couldn't bear to be without my pets for any longer. So I bought a trailer and moved out. But, during the entire time I was in the city of Victoria, I would have children at the daycare across the street that had never connected to such animals before. They would eat them, but never connect to them. And then they would sing and cheer for my pigs. And, you know, people would come up and they would, like, it would take me half an hour to walk a block up the street. Because people would park their cars or run up the street, and police officers would stop traffic to wave at me and stuff like that. And people would come up and constantly say, oh, I can't eat pork anymore. You know, I was regaining the connection of people towards the animals that they eat. And it was a beautiful thing. Because, you know, you show people that they can do tricks and they're smart and they have cool names, Athena and Vishnu, and the people are like, yeah, okay, you know what?
And, like, and then they see the man who's their human pal as well. And I think that even more further promotes a message that, wow, you can be a man and have big muscles and have pigs as friends.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I remember there was this one post. I posted these blogs about my pigs and how much I love them on Facebook. And this guy was real manly, you know, had to prove himself to everybody, and he was a jerk. He was my manager at the time, and he said something like, oh, you're such a sissy, or something like that, right? And I said, hey, did you see the other, like, 100 comments above yours? They're, like, 95% girls, and I know you like girls, so you think I'm a sissy, and I have pigs, and I'm like, you need to double-check yourself.
Think twice.
Yeah, so, I just think that people that are like that are full of insecurities of their own issues, you know what I mean?
And that's why I think it's so important that you two, the Warriors of Compassion, are going to be bringing that out of people, because you're out there, and you're big, and you're strong, and you're loud, and you're fierce, and you competed on the stage yesterday. I saw the videos that our co-host Jen posted, and you were out there making your poses, and you did that to spread the message of compassion, and I really appreciate that. So there's one subject that I'm sure people who are listening want to know about, we haven't touched on yet, is protein. So I want to know, like, what advice do you have for your fellow athletes who are seeing your plant-based message? They're all thinking, but what about the protein, right? I'm sure you get that a lot. And I would think that, yeah, so protein is going to be a concern for people. First of all, there's so many protein powders on the market. Like, do you both supplement, or are you just eating whole foods? Maybe, Randy, you can answer that one.
I'm primarily a whole food person. I have been taking Ergonomics hemp-based protein, and it's been working well. I cut it out near the last couple of weeks of my prep. But for the last years, like, when I used to work on the drilling rigs and stuff, I would spend $10,000 a year and supplements. And I realized the minute I went and I cut my bill down and I actually spent $500 more on real food, I got bigger. And when people say, where do you get your protein, or, you know, and everything like that, I'm like, well, you know, your chicken had to eat grains. And the protein came from the grains. I'm like, so your chicken grew up. I'm like, I just skipped the death part.
The chicken's the middleman. And the death part, as you put it.
I just skipped the murder part, and I just go and eat the grain myself. And that's it. And bottom line, I'm like, plants have protein. If you look at the profile of just like brown rice and broccoli, and you ate 3,500 calories of that, you're accidentally going to probably eat 100 grams of protein. It's the bottom line.
And if you are tracking your macros into a calculator like that online, as we said, and I've done that many times before, I find that I easily meet my protein requirements. Oh. And as just an active woman who's not bodybuilding, as bodybuilders, you do need more calories. So I would assume that would mean more protein as well.
Yeah, you're just going to eat it. If you eat the sheer volume of food, of good whole foods, you're going to get your protein requirement. I think protein is really a myth. The more I look into it, and Mike would definitely have to agree with me on that one, because they try to ram it down your brain. You're like, you need 2 grams of protein per body pound in order to get big. No, that's the supplement companies paying people to write ads so that you can buy their products. That's the meat and dairy industry saying you need to buy more of our products because you need to get more protein. It's just literally simply people are getting brainwashed. You eat your calories based on your height, weight, age requirement, activity level, you're going to meet your protein.
Mike, do you believe in taking protein powders, or do you?
Yeah, I do, to be honest with you. I was taking Iron Vegan. Before that was Sun Warrior. Now it's Ergogenics. But to be honest with you, when it comes to protein, I'm the one that says protein is overrated, because I was growing big and strong earlier this year when I have, like, people that are bodybuilders that are smaller than me and far weaker telling me I need to eat 250 to 300 grams of protein a day to be able to, you know, become a bodybuilder. And I'm like, well, I'm eating like 100 to 160 grams of protein a day, and I'm still doing it. You know what I mean? I think, you know, eating too much protein is actually I've heard that it can cause the body to become acidic. So it actually could, eating too much protein, counteract what you're going for. So to be honest, I'm not huge on protein.
Yeah, and acidity causes disease. So, I mean, I'm reading the China study right now, so I'm learning about that. I mean, the information is out there, but as you said, the big protein companies, like, you go into a supplement store, there are so many. Before, it used to be all whey, and now there are so many plant-based ones, too. Brands that I've never even heard of. I don't know if I trust them or not. I don't know, like, where are they coming from? I think they're here just for the money, but I'm glad they're here. But do we even need all these protein supplements? So is there anything else that you two supplement yourselves with that isn't food for taking into your body?
When I'm on prep, I like to take branched-chain amino acids and intra-workout carbs, just so I'm refueling my muscles as I'm training. But off-season, nah, just real food.
Okay, so speaking of real food, both of you, now that you can eat food, what are you going to eat now?
Everything.
Everything and anything.
Yeah,
everything.
I'm going to eat all the
food.
Yeah,
you're going to Nuva, so that's they've got really great vegan food there. What about you, Mike? What's on the schedule for eating?
Well, once we're finished talking, Michaela and I are going straight to, there's a vegan dim sum place in town, isn't there? I've heard. So we're seeking that. Do you know the name of it, by the way?
Is it?
That would help us find it.
Are you going to Pokong or Sunbokong? That's
okay,
or 3G? Those are the three vegan dim sum places.
We went to Pokong, Mike. That one.
Oh, is that the place we went
to? That's on Kingsway. Yeah, it's good. I mean, that's it's not as unhealthy as I thought you might eat. So that's awesome.
Yeah. We had the lasagna yesterday. I hadn't enjoyed food that much after, like, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks of this meal prep.
Yeah,
the lasagna that I had yesterday was
Did you buy that or did you make it?
We went to Vegan Pizza House.
Oh, they do. I was thinking that's the only place there's a vegan lasagna in all of Vancouver.
With the vegan meatballs too.
Oh yeah. Okay. And have you two tried out Virtuous Pie? You probably have. Yeah, because I went there the other day and it's still in my head. They've got new pizzas there. You should check it out. But I know you're only here until today, so.
Mike and I are really good in the kitchen. Like, I love experimenting with stuff, and
that's cool.
I would way rather go to the grocery store and try something new in my own house than go out. It's just, I don't know.
Awesome.
And I love cooking for other people too. But like, Mike and I are very, very similar people when it comes to compassion, and we just like to do nice things for other people because we're just good people.
Okay, you two sound like perfect men. So unfortunately, you're both taken right now, but I wished all the women out there had known about you before. They will now, and they'll be trying to, I guess they can follow you on Facebook. So before we get to that, I want to know, how does being vegan make you both feel as athletes and as human beings? And finally, like, what are your final thoughts on what compels you both to be vegan? Why don't you start first, Randy?
Honestly, being vegan changed my life in more ways than you can even imagine. Like, it changed everything. I used to be kind of an angry person. I used to stereotype and everything like that, and I don't anymore, because I'm like, you know what, if I'm super compassionate towards the animals, why don't I be super compassionate to every being on the planet? So
it opens your heart muscle for compassion, because compassion is not, it's not finite, it's infinite.
Well, and I, like, literally, Mike and I were talking about this yesterday, at least once a day, like, I'll be watching some motivational thing or I'll watch some video and I cry probably every day. Like, I might not, like, full out ball, like, you know, sobbing everywhere, But there'll be a tear that comes to my eye at least 5 days a week. Just because
that brings a tear to my eye. That is so special.
Or watch some happy video of some animal running around. I'll just be like, I can't help it. It's just that's who I am. And it's and that's the nice thing about it.
I'm going to tag you on a happy video I posted yesterday. I want to see a tear come to your eye. And what about you, Mike? How does being vegan make you feel as an athlete and as a human being?
Well, as an athlete, it's actually inspired me to get back into the gym to show people and prove, you know, what I'm doing is right in more ways than just for the animals and the ecosystem. So health-wise, yeah, it's inspired me to do that. But you know what? Like, I swear to God, okay, obviously, I have a little bit more mental clarity when I have more energy in it. When I quit eating meat and dairy, I got more energy. So, like, I feel smarter. I feel like I've woken up from, like, a zombie slumber. So yeah, it's overall affected my life significantly. And, you know, also, okay, this is a little tough to talk about, but I was addicted to a lot of things before. Meat and dairy were two of them. And when I was able to give them up, I was able to give up everything else. So, you know, it progressed me in life towards, you know, everything. Like, my life is so much better. I appreciate everything. And I can thank the animals for it, because this is what I did it for in the first place. Number one was for the animals.
That's all really beautiful. I want to have you two both back, like, maybe next year to see where you're on your journey, because you have so many things planned for the future. Thank you, Mike and Randy, for coming on the show today to speak to us about your vegan bodybuilding lifestyles and lifestyles of compassion and about the competition that you participated in yesterday. So you came in fifth, Randy, and Mike came in third. That's amazing. To find out more about Mike and Randy, follow them on Facebook at Mike and Randy Warriors of Compassion, and follow us on Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver, where I'll be posting lots of updates, and you have to send me photos.
I'll definitely send you pictures.
Okay. Thank you so much, and take care.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for having us.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. And thank you to Sean for listening today. Please join us on our next show on Friday, December the 1st. We'll have an interview with Casey Taft, professor of psychiatry at Boston University School of Medicine. He's an internationally recognized researcher in the areas of trauma and author of the book Motivational Methods for Vegan Advocacy, A Clinical Psychology Perspective. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts. You can also read our show blog there with detailed links, and you can subscribe to us via iTunes. Stay in touch with us at our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and you can join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your comments and suggestions about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. To end today's show, we have the musical artist Vegan Smythe to answer the question you may have been wondering during the past hour. It's called Where Do You Get Your Protein? Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Ever since I've been a vegan, it's been like a broken record, an irritating soundbite looping round and round forever. Where do you get your protein? Tell me where. Apples are 2% protein. Bananas are 5% protein. Oranges are 8% protein, and tomatoes are 19% protein.
Where do you get your protein?
Where do you get your protein?
Lettuce, 36% protein. Spinach is 50% protein. Potatoes are 18% protein.
Where do you get your protein?
Beans range from 20 to 58%, depending on the type of bean.
nuts give us protein glots while keeping our arteries clean. Broccoli's got a big 3-3.
33%.
Lentils have got a big 3-4.
34%.
Soybeans got the big 3-5.
35%.
And the main thing is I'm alive. I'm a vegan and I'm actually still alive. OMG, LOL, WTF. Where
do you get your protein?
Where do you get your protein?
Where do you get the protein?
Where do you get your 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 protein?
Tell me where.
Shrooms, shrooms, mush, mush. Shrooms, shrooms, mush, mush. What about mushrooms, fun guy?
Mushrooms contain, as portion of total calories, 56% protein. And in case you want to know about meat, the animal flesh that some people eat, well, beef can contain up to 40% protein.
Way less than a kidney bean.
Where do you get your protein?
Where do you get your protein?
Consumes about double the protein
is
overall body.
The truth is that excessive consumption of animal protein
in calories is consumed, it's virtually impossible to get an inadequate protein intake.
Because our bodies have a vital need for substance doesn't mean that twice or three times our
need is
necessary.
I think I've had enough.
100.5 FM.